This episode of Podnuts Pro was pre-recorded. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you again from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And on this episode, we are going to kind of go old school. I've been doing several interviews in a row of people that I've interviewed from SolarWinds or Malwarebytes or something else, but we're going to go back to the original concept of Podnuts Pro of tips and story time. And I will be having someone join me tonight, and that someone is Joe Kanazovich. Many of you might recognize the name. He's been around. But let me let Joe introduce himself and tell everybody who he is.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Marvin. Glad to be on the show.
What you said?
So I've been on a couple shows, Podnuts Daily. But anyway, I'm a solo tech just like yourself, Marvin. I have about 450 customers. Probably 30-40% of that is business customers. I do everything from, you know, servers to virus removal to workstations, you know, the whole gamut of what everybody else pretty much does too. So I've been in business about 7 years now. I'm in the Fort Wayne, Indiana area. That's my whole area, the Fort Wayne area. We have about 300,000 people. And we do have winter here, just to let you know.
Winter? What's that?
Well, you'd find it pretty humorous that I was texting back and forth with my son. He's building a new home up in Chicago, and we were texting about snowblowers. You know what one of those are?
I've seen them on TV, but never in person. I actually did spend some time in Topeka, Kansas. And in Berlin, Germany. So I don't know that it was a blizzard, and I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and I do remember the snow being above my head, and we had to shovel. So I think that was back before snowblowers became a household appliance.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I try to avoid it, but it's been wonderful here. It's end of November. And it was like 65 degrees today, which in northern Indiana at the end of November, that's pretty doggone good. So,
well, we had a nice cool day here. I believe it, I don't think it broke 80. And, you know, there were some sweaters about. So, pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you.
All right. So, Joe, now, we've also been to a couple of unconventions together.
That's correct.
Both the Chicago or the Toronto unconvention and also this last one in D.C. Back in September. So you and I haven't spoken since then in depth, but what do you remember from the conference that you liked? Any good takeaways, any good stories, anything you'd like to share about that?
Yeah, I really enjoy the unconvention. I think that it's, I like the fact that, especially the last one up over in Washington, D.C., where we had the breakout sessions. You know, I really liked, David Sims, mm-hmm. The HIPAA, for MSPs. That was enlightening, to say the least, in which just recently talking about David, I joined the, HIPAA for MSPs, his newsletter and his, I think it's the pro version of his monthly HIPAA for MSPs, which I haven't had a chance to look at yet, but I did.
Say, did you happen to at least get on the page and go to a section other than the downloads?
The answer would be no. The only thing I did is pay for it. But I did that last Friday. I I really like the, I thought with Malwarebytes being there and David Sims and it's kind of intimate. You get a chance to talk to other techs. You know, when you go to these bigger conferences, you don't seem to have that. I'm not saying that, I think there, you know, I have some recommendations, for it. And I thought there was some really good recommendations by Lori and some others that you interviewed after the unconvention, John Dubinsky.
Right. Yep. Our debriefing show.
What's that?
Our debriefing show.
Yep. Yep. I personally like to see it in Chicago, next time. There was quite a few people from the Chicago area, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I don't know, what is 15 or 16 people?
There were a lot. Or more? There were a lot. I don't know. I thought you guys, you know, came over on a bus together or something.
The answer is we all flew. No, there was one guy, I think, rode his bike. But no, that I know the unconvention is designed to be different than a typical convention, I guess, the traditional.
Yep, uh-huh.
But I think that having it at a hotel, in the hotel, would still be nice. You know, where you know, wherever you're staying, you just go downstairs. You know, you could still probably have the breakout rooms, I'm assuming. You probably figure that out. But I think it would make it easier on especially the people setting it up, you know, or if it's right at the hotel where you're staying. But again, I'm not involved in it, and I'm just giving you my two cents, which right. doesn't mean a whole lot probably, but I know there's a hotel that the Channel Pro had in Chicago. It's about 2 miles from O'Hare Airport.
Yeah.
And it was really nice. I mean, that'd be a perfect place. It's I think it was a Hyatt Rosemont. Matter of fact, I think there's a casino like almost next door to it or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, casino, yeah. That'll make it worthwhile.
But you know, I guess that to comment, you know, I think it gives you those conferences, like it gives you a chance to step back and evaluate your business a little bit.
Right.
Because you're talking to techs one-on-one and you're hearing what other people are doing. And we all do the same thing. So, you know, you have a lot better input on it, and also you understand more than some of these big conferences like Channel Con, you know, CompTIA.
Right. Uh-huh.
You know, you've been to that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yep. Been to those two.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's where the van. Man in the van came
birth
from.
Of the man in the van was the Chicago Channel Con.
Yep. So, I was there.
Yep. It's there. You know, the real thing about the unconvention, obviously, yes, meant to be unconventional. And mainly because at the bigger conferences, you don't really get a chance to engage. You go into sessions and you listen to people on a panel. You might get to ask a question or so, but you don't have that true intimate one-on-one or one-on-five where you can sit and talk to people who are, for all practical purposes, doing the same thing you're doing. Whether you're a solo tech or you're a shop with five techs, for the most part, most of us are doing the same thing. So we're, you know, as Michael Smith says, we're in the trenches together. Some of us may be a little further along the path than somebody else, but we all still have those struggles. How do you bill customers on a regular basis? How do you bill them for as much as you possibly can? How do you, you know, make yourselves more efficient in getting work done? How do you get new customers? All those things that we're struggling, it's nice to be able to sit and look somebody in the eye across the table and have a discussion rather than having somebody up on a platform giving you this bullet list of things that they're ethereal, they're concepts, but they're not really much to take home. And the unconvention, obviously, the goal is to be able to have some takeaways that you can go back and implement and really make your business better. But at the same time, you're going to get a lot closer with other techs, other companies that you can call upon and get help, get answers, get advice, share stories, you know, the good and the bad, and hopefully, you know, make your business better.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I, especially as a solo tech, you know, I mean, that's why we you know, you listen to podcasts, you listen to, you have to be like a sponge learning something, because you don't have 15 other techs around you that, hey, you have a problem. Have you ran across this before? You have to, you know, you've got to have some communication with somebody else, you know, to be able to talk about things. At least for myself,
right.
You know, I'm fairly new in the business. 6-7 years is not that long. You know, I've been doing it longer than that, but, you know, as myself in business, 7 years. The other thing that I thought of is, I thought the sessions were great. I'd love to be able to have went to all the sessions that they had, you know, the breakout sessions.
Right.
I think we got a chance to go to 2 or 3. I can't remember of the 4. Do you remember?
Well, the way that the sessions were designed, at least in terms of the labs, is one thing we learned from the first year is to give people the opportunity to try to attend more than one. So each lab was presented twice. The sessions on Saturday, we haven't been able to kind of work that out to be able to provide opportunities to get to more than one or two sessions. I know that for the 2018 unconvention, I know that the group has already started planning. I probably can't give too many details about that just yet, but I know that they've taken the suggestions that a lot of people have given. The attendees were able to fill out the questionnaire afterwards. Yep. The Facebook group, which is unfortunately a private closed group only for people that have attended. But a lot of those ideas at least have been discussed in the planning committee. So I know that, you know, how to make content more attainable for everybody, how to make it so you can attend more sessions, get more out of it. I know that all of those things are in the works.
Yeah. You know, Malwarebytes being there, I mean, those guys are just fantastic. I mean, they're so accessible, Alex and Michael.
Yep.
You know, and you talked about it in your last show about Malwarebytes, the Tech Veg tool set.
Right.
You know, I think it's a great product myself. I've been using it since the last unconvention, the one in Toronto, because they brought it up in Toronto. I signed up for it right away, and I've been using it, and they keep improving it, seems like monthly. I think one of the best things in that tool set is where it analyzes the hard drives, and you know how he explained that, you know, the smart testing that they know. I thought that was fantastic. I know Tom Wilmot from Chicago, and I think you met him, at the unconvention. He said that's worth buying it, that alone. Because I've caught hard drives already that were bad, and what is it, crystal disk?
Crystal disk. Never caught it. Yeah.
You know, that's a big deal, knowing that a hard drive is going to fail, you know.
Well, it's a big deal because even though we've used Crystal Disk Info for years, I was an advocate for that product, not because it was free, but because it was better at detecting hard drives than what we had previously used in a format that was a lot quicker. Now, you can obviously download the manufacturer tools from Seagate and Western Digital and run those, but they're a separate tool and they require a little bit more time, and they're manufacturer specific in a lot of cases, whereas Crystal Disk Info wasn't, and now the Malwarebytes tool set is not. It's reading the smart information of whatever drive you have. So there is no specific tool that you have to have. This tool will work. And I'm going to say virtually every drive. I can't obviously speak for them and say it works on every drive because I don't know. And I don't know if they know, because it's pulling smart drive data. Not every drive reports smart data in the same way. But if you mentioned it on the show I had them last, where I asked them about that, and you know, that is one of those things where, yeah, if they could make that a little more accessible to where, you know, we can see it on the front page or something. I mean, their issue scanner, to be honest, is pretty quick.
It's definitely quick.
So it's not like I don't want to run the issue scanner, but a lot of times you just want to check the drive.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Like you said, just one little thing, boom, I'm done. But yeah, that it's one of the things I mentioned to Alex, I sent him an instant message. I would like to be able to leave it. I put it up in Google Drive and then download it when I want to work on it remotely for a customer's computer.
Right.
So you download it and put it on the customer's computer. I asked him if we could password protect it, just leave it there. You know, where when you hit the executable, you know, you put a password in, boom.
Right.
Go in. You know, and he said, that's been mentioned before.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, I didn't bring that up when I spoke to them, but I had talked to them about using it as, you know, a shop, as a managed service provider, being able to push that out and use the tool. But yes, have it to where the end user just can't go click on it themselves and do that. So the password protection is a great idea. I know I do that with my D7.
Yep.
That I also use, where I will leave that in a subfolder on customer computers. And even if they go and find the executable, they click on it, boom, password.
Yep. Yeah, you don't want customers messing with that kind of stuff. You know, and I don't want to, it'd be nice to just leave it on there, because it'll do an update for you.
Right.
You know, if it's a year later, hit the update and it does the update, boom, ready to go.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to download it each time. So I would like them to do that. But I mean, they keep improving it all the time. It's much better than when it started, you know, and I think the scanner works, you know, the Malwarebytes itself, the scan seems faster, you know, than using the normal Malwarebytes scan.
Right.
You know, installing the program, you know.
Well, that is the benefit of being a tech, being an integrator, being a managed service provider, and getting the better tools.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, Malwarebytes is not a sponsor of this show. I'll probably ask them maybe at some point. But being able to do our jobs better, smarter, faster is everything I'm pushing for. And that's what the tool set is doing, even though we know it's not complete. So,
they made big improvements and their support. I mean, my gracious, if you have an issue or anything, you contact either one of them and you get an answer back very quickly.
Yep.
You know, Alex is very responsive. He's always on Facebook, you know. So the guys, and for them to come and hands on with all the guys that were there, that's great. You know, that was a great, you know, whoever invited them, they weren't the first one also. But the more vendors we could get at those, the more I would like it too. You know, I would, you know, like vendors like Sonic Wall or Watch Guard, you know, which you guys talk about all the time, you and Matt, you know, vendors like that, where they can show their wares a little bit more.
Well, one of the things that I know that I've been looking for as being guest on the Podnuts Pro Show, and I know that we've discussed in getting to not only the unconvention, but some other things that are kind of in the works behind the scenes, is finding those vendors that are not just channel friendly, but that they are going to be in the trenches with us, that we can be able to reach out to and talk to, you know, not just on a vendor / reseller level to where they're going to milk every penny they can out of us, but they're going to listen to us. They're going to obviously make an effort to make changes that will benefit us, because one of the things that SolarWinds is trying to push out, and I don't know that it's permeated through their entire organization. It was something that kind of started back in GFI and Matt's Focus or Logic Now. But for the SolarWinds MSP division, they are still of the mindset that their success is based on our success. So being able to help us do our jobs better is what's going to turn around and make us want to use them more. And then they'll make more money as well. But, you know, it's a cycle where all of us are going to be benefiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm fairly new with SolarWinds. I've been only using it probably maybe 6-7 months. So yeah, I know you've been with them for quite a while, haven't you?
I believe it's going on 4 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. So you probably have a lot of people on your managed services then.
I've got, to be honest, I only have about half of my clients on.
Okay.
Because a lot of my clients aren't under what I call the monthly service agreement. So I'm slowly getting some of those people on it, where I do have a couple of customers that I've gone ahead and pushed out my RMM to their machines, but not much has been activated. But it's there for when they're ready. And then all I got to do is flip on the antivirus, flip on the web protection, and do all of that. So I'm moving that way more and more. Most of my law firms are already on it because they're the ones that have seemed to understand the monthly management concept, and they get it. And they see that we're monitoring stuff and how quickly I can respond, you know, and remote in and take care of stuff. They see the benefit of a cloud-based centralized management for their antivirus. I had a customer just yesterday ask me for a internet report, and I was able to use the web reporting feature from the SolarWinds MSP, just put it down. Even though it was a summary, that was all they needed to confront, I guess, the best way to say it, the staff person that they thought was spending a little too much time on the internet in the unauthorized personal space, and pulled that up for them. And literally, I had that within 10 minutes in an email to the office manager, and they were happy. Whereas, you know, the old way I used to do it was to go to the free utility Nearsoft, use the Internet Explorer history, and then the Google history and those things, and download the logs, and then, you know, extract them and put them in an easily read format, because they don't come easily readable when you export them. So all of those tools are nice. That's now it's interesting, because I was not a big RMM tool person to begin with, even though I had the monthly retainer or service agreement. I wasn't using those tools. And
me too.
It was something where it took me a little time to jump on board.
Yep. I'm doing it kind of the old way, where I have maintenance agreements, but I'm not using the RMM like I should be. But I'm starting to gravitate toward that. But I have a couple businesses that have really, really poor internet. I don't know if you have that issue where you're at, but I have, you know, Fort Wayne has surrounding areas that are residential, very rural, you know,
right,
and they only have DSL 2 megabits per second down. And it's tough to put those RMM tools and get stuff done with that, because any bandwidth just kills it at all. You know, I don't know if you probably don't have that. We're in Fort Lauderdale. You got probably good internet most of your area.
Well, I mean, yes, we do. And most of my clients are law firms that need the high speed. So they've got to transfer data from office to office over the VPN. They do a ton of internet stuff. They do a ton of large attachments that they have to not only send by email, but they have to upload them into their client portals, stuff like that. So they're on the bandwagon with bandwidth. So I don't have that problem. So
that's really tough. You know, most of my customers don't have that problem, but you know, when you're a business customer and have that, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, in this office, they may only have 6 or 7 people, but sometimes they have 20, and if they're all on the internet at the same time, you know what that's going to do to 3 megabits down.
Yeah.
That's going to choke it to death. So, but
all right.
But there was something that what was it they were talking about when you were SolarWinds, the net, what was that called?
Net flow and net path.
Yes, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. I basically am getting permission from my customer before I do that. I have a customer that has multiple offices where this would be great, and I'm going to use it more to pinpoint the bandwidth between the offices as opposed to, I think, the traditional way most people would use it to trace bandwidth issues maybe between an office and their hosted exchange, Office 365, or to a particular website. So I have not yet deployed that, but I probably will by the end of the year.
So that is up and running.
Yes, it's already there.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Maybe I missed that in your, you know, in your podcast.
Yep,
when they were talking. There.
I don't even think I've looked for where it is in the dashboard, but I'll have to go in and look. But I have noticed there's a lot more in the dashboard this month than there was last month. Or I should probably rephrase that. Since the last time I actually really looked at the dashboard.
I hear you.
Because most of the time I just go to my clients, go to my desktops and connect and do whatever I need to do. But, I just started using some of the additional features. I'm putting a lot more notes in there, so I'm working on trying to get that notes report to email me at the end of every day, all the notes that we put in on desktop. So those are the types of things I'll be working on.
That's a tough thing right there is what you just got to mention, documentation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that takes work to make sure that you document what you've done at a location or whatever. You know, I struggle with that. I'm getting better and better all the time, but I hate that when I go to look at notes that I've taken and that I know I was here 3 weeks ago and there's no notes. You know what I mean? I hate that. You know, you gotta pay attention to what's going on and be able to reference back. And I think we all struggle with that at times. You know?
We do. And one of the ways I got around that was by always using D7 as much as I could. Because, you know, do you use D7?
Not much. Okay. I don't.
So do you know what D7 is though?
Right? Yep, okay. Sure do.
So
yep.
One of the things I like about D7, you what?
I have it.
You do have it. You just don't.
Okay.
Hey, let me give you a tip. Here's a good reason to use it. So anytime I do work on a station and I can use D7, I do. Because one of the features that you can force it to do is when you go to close out, it'll pop up a dialog box with email and a section for you to put in notes. And basically all I do is I make sure that the client name is there. It'll already put the name of the device that you're working at. And you can just freeform write whatever it is you did. You know, scan PC for malware, found and remove X number of infections. And it will also add in things that you do in terms of reports. So one of the things that D7 does, if you tell it to, is it will create a computer report of the system and give you all the information. Let me pull up D7. So pardon us while we do some housekeeping, because here we go. So I'll just pull up D7. And one of the things that I liked about it is, let me put my password in because I password protected it even on my own station. Let me close down the Malwarebytes tool set. Get all this stuff going. So if you haven't used D7.
Very little.
Okay. So you have obviously all the little things you can check, but one of the things under the audit report in the very beginning is the info report, which will gather all the system information. So that will give you not only the computer name, it'll give you obviously system information like the motherboard, how much memory's in it. It'll give you the, manufacturer serial number. So for instance, I use a lot of HP equipment. So one of the things that I like to grab is the serial number. So if I need to go look up the support history or, is it still under warranty, that sort of thing. It'll give, how much memory's in there. It'll even tell you how much memory per slot is in a machine. Gives you the Windows OS information, the product key, when it was installed, drive information, printers. It'll attempt to get as many product keys as possible. One of the reasons I loved that is because you could also have it give you the mail settings. So if you had somebody that was not attached to an on-premise exchange, it would give you the server information, username, password, all of that as well. So I would run that before I did any sort of transfer to a new computer. So I had all of the customer information right there. You can do the installed app, so it'll tell you all the software that's installed. But let me go to what I was actually getting to instead of going through all the features. Is at the end, when I'm done and I close out, it brings up this close box. And in the box, I can, check the box. It'll say email reports. And I have it email to myself. And then I actually have it set up to where it will CC my office assistant. So that when I'm done, I will go in and put in the email body everything I did, the activity log. But it will also include that info report that I mentioned. If you're running a scan and you've got malware reports from, Malwarebytes or ADW Cleaner, JRT, because all of that is still separate in my version, it'll put those reports as attachments. So it will send those attachments with the email back to my office. So when I do need to go back and look, if I want to put in more detailed reports or if somebody calls me up and says, hey, you really found malware? What kind of malware did you find? Well, I just go back to the email, pull up the report, and I can tell them. And if I want, I'll forward it to them or pull out sections. So that's how I got around trying to remember everything I did on site. I just put it in the email, send it back. And hopefully if my assistant's on the ball, by the time I got back to the office, it's already entered in my QuickBooks and ready to invoice.
Nice. Yeah, that's real nice. I use SIW for, I don't know if you've ever used it, SIW before for getting computer information or, on each workstation. But I like that because that's giving you all the information that you, when you're done working on the computer too.
Right.
You know what you did, right?
Yep.
Yep. I like that.
Well,
again, when I find a time, maybe I'll mess with that.
That's not too bad.
I've used it a little bit. I haven't taken the time to really get down and dirty with it, though, and learn it. You're solo tech.
Yeah.
But you got to take the time to make yourself more efficient, too.
Well, that is the challenge for us.
Yeah.
Finding the time to make more time.
Yep, that's right. Yep, no doubt about it. I know that for me, I look back. I don't know if you look back and think, what would you do differently when you first started? You know what I mean? And first thing you want is customers, right? But, sometimes I wish I would have taken a little bit more time trying to figure out what to use, like Repair Shopper. I use QuickBooks. I think that's what you just mentioned, right? QuickBooks. Yeah. That's what I use for billing, and it works fine. But, Repair Shopper is supposedly very nice too. I've looked at it, but now that you're far enough along, sometimes changing is hard to do.
Yes, it is.
Because that's time consuming.
Yep. So you mentioned, what would you do in the very beginning? So I know you've had this version of your business for 6 years.
Yep.
I've had my version for 20. And I thought that I was doing all the proper business things in the beginning. Did do all my proper, getting incorporated, getting my tax taken care of, getting an accountant to help me, getting an attorney to look at some things, getting what, wimpy version of a logo that I got so I could have shirts and all that stuff. And I actually put together a group of techs that I found in the area where we could meet on a regular basis and kind of help each other out. That seemed to go okay, but it's interesting that it wasn't until about 5 years ago when I started getting involved with the podcast and in the channel conferences, the Podnuts group, the ASCII group, where I actually started getting real tips and real tools that would advance my business. Now, the techs that I hung out with back then, we still hang out, we still talk.
Right.
But it's interesting that none of them are really doing what I do. Now, one of them did grow his business and started using Kaseya way back when. I don't know if he's still doing that. But I know that, you know, the last time I spoke to him, I have no idea what he was doing, you know, with his tool set, with his automation and stuff like that. But we didn't discuss that way back when. So finding a community to have those types of discussions would have been critical for me because, you know, the amount of money that I have increased in the last 3 years is, I don't want to say ridiculous, but if I had done some of this, you know, even 17 years ago, how much
exactly
I could have gotten my wife her pool a lot sooner.
Exactly. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's invaluable. The podcast, all the friendships that you build in the tech world, you know, it's amazing what you can learn. You know, the tech tips that they, you know, the tool tips that we gave at the Unconvention, everybody rattled off different tools that they were using and stuff.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's invaluable. Yes. You know, that's just, you just can't put a price on it.
All right. So, Joe, why don't we shift a little bit here and talk about, I guess, some of the tips or stories, or what's some stuff that you've had rattling around that you might want to share with some people, you know, whether you learned it at the Unconvention or you've listened to a show, or, you know, you've had some customer stories, you know, what's kind of like stuck in your mind right now that you just got to get out?
Well, one of the items that I wanted to bring up was, I did a dental office quite a while ago, and I had to go in and it was really a whole new project. Workstations, wiring, everything. But one of the things that I used that I really liked was the articulating arms that I purchased from a company. It's called ICWUSA.com. And how I found them was I was at the hospital or a doctor's office, and I noticed these articulating arms. I said, man, these things are really nice. So I looked into it. They're not cheap by no means. One of the good things, are made in USA, as it says, ICWUSA. Yeah. They're custom made, but they are so well built. I mean, if you've got customers in the medical field or any that's used a lot, these are not going to wear out, start falling off the wall. They have mounts for ceiling mounts, wall mounts, desk mounts.
I was going to say, I'm looking at the site, and there's a ton of mounts. I mean, all different under cabinet, ceiling mounted, computer mounts, pole mounts.
It's exactly. And if you look on that site, and it is ICWUSA.com, they have now you see they even have it broke out with, I think, medical devices. Is that what they say on there? I gotta get there.
Well, they've got a healthcare site and a dental site.
Yes.
And then a separate product site.
Yep. And you could go and have you can use their configuration to build your own mount. But it's really high quality stuff. So I'm just mentioning it for the listeners that if you're looking for something, I've used their computer mounts to mount computers on the wall. Like I said, I use their articulating arms for the one that has the monitor and a keyboard, you know, where you can pull it out about 4 foot,
right.
You know, and a lot of the dental offices, you know, they have the digital x-rays now, you know, that they can pull it right out to them. Then, you know, put the, x-ray into the person's mouth and do the digital x-ray. So it makes it handy for them. So, but, I just thought I'd bring that up.
So here's a question I have for you, because I have a couple of medical offices. One is a dental office, but I've never been asked or even thought to pursue that portion of the business. How did you get to be in a position where you could recommend these arms for them?
Well, the dentist that was there, when he called me, he didn't have anything, but he said, this is what I want to do. I want to go with Dentrix. He already knew the software that he wanted to use. He knew the X-ray software, which is DEXIS. He knew what he wanted to use, but just didn't how to go about it, doing all of it. So my wife works in a dental field, so that helps a lot. You know, I know the lingo a little bit, you know, but I just, you know, and, you know, looked around and did quotes for him, and I did it from scratch. I mean, that was my first time I ever done all that, he was very happy with all the stuff that I did. It was a pretty good sized project. It was probably $20,000 when it was all done.
Right.
You know, wiring and I think it was about 8 computers, 8 workstations. It's a peer to peer. You know, it's not a server. You know, Dentrix can run off of a standalone workstation, you know, fairly easily, you know. But anyway, that was a project that I enjoyed doing.
So the DEXIS, I'll be honest with you, I know that that's the software that the dental office that I use, they use the DEXIS, and they use another software. I can't remember the name of it. Because they use the DEXIS for the x-rays, and then they have their management system.
Well, there's EagleSoft, SoftDent, Patterson Dental does something. I have an office next door to another dental office I take care of, and they have software too, and I can't remember what she's using. Googling it right now to see if I can figure it out. Patterson Dental.
All right. And that was obviously, I guess, having the wife in the dental industry helps.
Yep. Yeah. And at first, I mean, I understand Dentrix a lot more, and I understand how it, you know, as an IT person, how to install it and configure and all that stuff much better than I did. But they have great support for people that are afraid to get into the dental field. You know, if the dentist is getting the support from any of those companies, their support's fantastic.
Right.
Dentrix and DEXIS, you call them, they'll help you. You know. So for the listeners, don't be afraid to take on a dental office, but make sure the dentist gets the support for the Dentrix, right. DEXIS, or whatever you're using. That's my experience with it. They pretty much, you got to have the support for the dental software.
Right.
You just need it. You know, they have a backup to a cloud backup, most of them, for the software that they pay for.
Right. So I found that software, Mogo. Is that
right? I never heard that.
Yeah.
Heard of that.
Cloud based. Dental practice efficiency. It's more of their all-in-one software. So that's what he uses. Kind of like their practice management software for their front office stuff.
To keep track of the patients, right. Appointments, yep. And all that. Yeah, that's what the Dentrix does for Dentrix does that part. DEXIS is the X-rays.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I remember there were two different products, and I remember DEXIS for the x-rays. I just didn't remember the management side, but they use MOGO. All right, so I'll put that in the show notes.
Okay. Something to try anyway. I had a call from someone. It was a company that was putting in a POS system for a bar / restaurant. Somebody calls me, and they were having problems with getting the POS system to work. I don't know their POS system, so I go over there, and they're waiting for me to get there. And I said, what you got going on? He said, we cannot get our printers for our POS system to communicate with each other. And I said, okay, well, let's go look and see what's going on. And we go in where the switch is and all this. And he said, these two wires go from here. One goes to the bar. The other one goes to the kitchen where the other printer is. I says, how do you know that? Well, we really don't. We're guessing that.
Okay.
let's backtrack a little bit here. So I went out and got my Fluke, my Lynx printer, the wireless one, where you can, connect it and it'll flash a port on a switch.
Right.
So I did that, and both cables were wrong for one, so I got that so that I knew which cables went to where. And then I checked everything out. I tested the cables, just with the Fluke to make sure that you got a connection and all that, everything's working.
Right.
I connect my laptop to each cable. I get internet. I get connection. I get DHCP. Everything's working. And I ping the printers, get a response, And he told me when I'm there, he said, I've been here 10 days trying to fix this. I said, 10 days? And these POS, I don't remember the name of the company. Maybe you might, is it Clover? Is Clover a...
Don't do any POSs, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's pretty much, the equipment looks plug and play.
Right.
I mean, it just picks up a DHCP, boom, it works. Well, this wasn't working. They could not get the printers to work. But the owner goes and tells me, say, we put one printer in and everything worked. They go, we need another printer in the kitchen. Once they put the second one, it wouldn't work. I said, really? And she goes, I'm so frustrated. We're opening. This is a brand new place, getting ready to open on Monday, and this is Friday. She says, I'm so frustrated. He needs to get this thing working. So anyway, to make long story short, I go and I'm sitting there with this guy, and I said, I don't know what to tell you. I said, everything should work. It has to be this printer here, something in your system. And he says, don't go there. I said, what do you mean don't go there? I said, the whole system, the system works. I said, this network works. The communication's working. This should be working. It's got to be your equipment. If you tried swapping out your printer, whatever it was, be what it does, it would go and it would find the printer on both device, on both cash registers, and all of a sudden it'd lose them. And they have 10 meg down for their internet. And I says, well, how much do they need for these POS systems? It's cloud-based, I guess.
Right.
So how much do you need? He says, we need at least 5 per station. And I says, how do you know you have 10? So I go and check it, and they're getting 2.5 meg down. So I go, and he calls his tech guy, and the tech guy says, well, that's not going to work for those POS systems. And I'm telling this guy, I told the tech guy, I don't think that's the problem. I think you got a problem with your equipment. He said, oh, no, it can't be. Well, anyway, they made this company, this restaurant, get Comcast, which is 30 meg down. They said it would work. And I said, and I told the guy from the POS system, I said, if this doesn't work, they're going to be awful upset with you after, paying for Comcast to come and install all this. They had Comcast come. That didn't fix the problem. And I told him, I says, well, they called me back because when Comcast was putting it in, they Comcast calls me and he says, "Hey, we can't get internet on the workstation in our office." I said, "What's your IP address that is that your subnet?" It says 10.1. I said, "Well, that's a 192 and it's got a static IP. I just happened to look on that workstation." So I said, "I'll be there in a few minutes. I'm a little ways away." But anyway, make a long story short, we all get done. It was the equipment. For 10 days, these people have been in there messing around, spending all this money and time trying to get this. It's all they did was swap something out, and it worked. One of the printers.
So the printer didn't work.
Yeah, the printer, there was something wrong with the printer where it was causing the communication to go out. You know, I don't know why. You know, it's their equipment. I didn't right. know it, you know. But, you know, I thought it was funny. This guy says, "Don't go there, that it's my equipment." I'm thinking, everything else is working, you know. It's amazing.
Very interesting. I mean, did they, or did you, I guess, at any time take one printer off at a time to check and see if they worked alone, since the one did work before?
No, I didn't. I just made sure that they were getting the connection they needed. I could plug in on my laptop. I could get internet. I could ping. I can do anything I wanted. And I would ping from one printer to the other printer. You know what I mean?
Right.
From the computer to the printer, everything would work. But it would not. It'd come online and go off all the time. And I said, "It's got to be your equipment. It's causing this." You know, I figured it was something in their setup because they only had one printer at one time.
Right.
You know, but I don't know. But it's just amazing that this guy, he was just beside himself. This guy that installs this, "I've installed these for 5 years. I've never had a problem. It's all I do is plug them in and they work." You know, I said, "Well, sometimes you have a problem." But
so here's the question. Was he there when you were plugging in the Lynx printer?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he could see that connecting wise, everything was working, which
that's correct.
That's why I love to have those devices on hand and show them, "Look, this is working." So if this is working, something else isn't. And that something mm-hmm. else is your stuff.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I know you have, because I've seen your stuff from you know, the unconvention. You have the big fluke, big yeah. daddy fluke, or whatever you call it.
Yep.
But, you know, even that little Lynx printer, I mean, that's so handy for trying to, you know where, which cable goes where. Just being able to flash a port is priceless. You know, I mean, it saves you a lot of time trying to figure it out which one's which, you know. But yeah, it just amazes me with, you know, here I'm trying to help this guy and he's telling me, "Don't even go there. It's my equipment." And I thought, well, if everything else is communicating, it has to be, you know, it has to be.
Hmm.
I showed him, I showed him everything. And then finally, you know, they swapped something out and it worked, you know, but 10 days.
Yeah. I, if I'd have been there more than an hour, I probably would have been frustrated with them.
I was there about 2 hours, and I'll be honest with you, you know, and he's the one that the company called me, the POS company, POS system company. And he said, I went to get paid, and he said, "Well, she's going to pay you, the owner." I said, "She's not going to pay me. She didn't call me, you know."
And it wasn't her problem.
That's right. That's not her problem. She's paying for you to get this thing working, right? He ended up paying me, but. It's like unbelievable. You know, he thinks that she's going to just pay me for coming to help, you know.
So
anyway,
so lesson there is to, again, have testing equipment where you can verify network connectivity, and something as simple as showing that the cables work, showing that you can get connection, and especially with something like the Lynx printer, not just showing, you know, continuity, but showing that I'm getting a DHCP, I'm getting mm-hmm. out to the internet, this connection works. So if the Lynx printer works on the connection, why doesn't the printer work on the connection? So being able to diagnose that, and, you know, course, I would have gone in there with the big boy and made it to where I could see everything at once and show them and say, look, structurally, this network is sound. So let's focus on the printer, because I would have made them focus on that printer. Take it offline, try another printer, do whatever you got to do. But sometimes you got to face that battle of somebody who claims he's been doing it, 5 years. And, that probably shouldn't be a knock on him, because he didn't make the equipment. He didn't configure the equipment. He just assumed it would work, but he has no way of verifying that it works.
I even isolated the place wasn't that big, and I unplugged, I isolated. So I was afraid maybe, is there something else in this building giving off sending out DHCP, and I thought, because that could cause a problem like that, where the printers would show up and all of a sudden it'd go away. Yeah. So I unplugged all the other items on the switch and just had those two. It was going over there, still wouldn't work.
But if you had the big boy, you could detect multiple DHCP servers.
I know that. when you get done with one of yours, let me know.
I may have one for sale soon. So here's a question. The Comcast or whoever that told you that they were getting a 10 subnet.
Yeah, it was Frontier that they didn't tell me that. This POS system guy said, they're getting 10 down. And I said, how do you know you are? He said, well, we don't. And that's when I ran a test. And I ran a test from my laptop, from where the printer is, connected wired. And I'd ran a testmy.net. And it was giving like 2.5, almost 3.
Right. But we know that internet really had nothing to do with the issue.
That's right.
But the question is, the person, when you were telling them that it needed to be on a 192 subnet, but they were getting the 10, they were getting the Comcast subnet. How did that happen that they were getting the wrong subnet?
The 10.1 was fine.
Okay.
It was really fine. They couldn't get internet to the workstation. It was right next to it.
Oh, okay.
Because it was on a static IP.
Oh, the static. Okay.
192. They just didn't know that.
Oh, okay.
And I told them, I just happened to look at the workstation when I was there and it was on a static IP. And I said, you're not going to get internet unless you take that off or change it, whatever. So anyway.
All right. So 2 hours of your time substituted for 10 days of their time.
That's right. And I got paid. So what the heck? I'll probably get a new customer. The owners were very nice and we had some chat and time while they were messing around, but, probably be a new customer.
All right. Can't beat that.
Nope.
All right. All right. So Joe, anything else? I'm letting this be your show. I've talked a lot the last few shows. So.
Well, the only other thing that, I could think of for right now is, I'm going to be moving my website. I signed up with, help me out here. I went blank.
Matt Rodella?
Yes.
Site builder?
I talked to him at the Unconvention and I signed up. I haven't done anything. I'm going to probably have him do all the work for me, pay him to move my website and stuff. I just changed. I moved all my emails over to Office 365 two or three months ago. I was using some other company and it worked well, but I like Office 365.
Were you doing your own website?
No, I didn't do my brother-in-law did my website for me. And I'm going to make some changes to it. I think when Matt moves it over and see what he says.
Okay.
So, but I don't mess with websites. I don't know about you.
Have you seen my website?
I haven't looked at it lately. Why? Is it that good or that bad?
Actually, that's a good thing because you haven't seen the original that I used to have that I had up for probably 15 years. Never changed because I didn't use it. And I didn't care because I you know, I would go see my customers in person and they would call me, and they really had no excuse to ever go to the website. So of course, when I start getting involved in all this stuff, everybody starts going to my website and saying how crappy it looks. So
that's a good feeling, isn't it?
It was nice. So I did get it updated. It's probably not as nice as it could be, but it's a lot better than it was. So I like it now. It's got a little couple of buggy things in there, but
that looks good. You know, it's like you just need a presence. You know, it depends what you want to do with it, but
so
it shows your mugshot there.
Yep. So, but yeah, the first one I did, and I had somebody professional do this one.
What's that?
I had to have a professional do it.
Did you say you did your first one yourself?
Yeah, the first one I did myself. I just used one of those stupid template sites, and I'll have to find one of those internet cached sites where it'll go back and find one of my old front page websites, and I'll have to post that somewhere.
Yeah, there you go. You got a picture of you with the Big Daddy Fluke.
That's it. And that is my, they are, that picture is actually at one of my law firms, which they swap back and forth of being my largest customer. That's their one office, and you see all of those cables are basically from that office, and then you don't see, there's a whole big chunk of black cables coming down, which are their phone systems. We've got Cat 6 cabling on the right, Cat 5 on the left for their printers and other devices. We've got, I think, three rows of Allworks boxes for their phone system. And then what else is in there? And then this customer has 8 offices that connect back to this one. And so I kind of have to go in there every now and then just to make sure everything is good.
They must have a lot of workstations in that building.
That particular one has 55.
If you talk to Matt lately, has he used his Fluke yet? he's not on to defend himself, but
he's not. But I'm gonna take a wild guess and say no. So speaking of Matt, I will say this as a programming note. I have been in contact with the Rain Man, and we don't know when it's going to happen, but there will be a special appearance by Matt Rainey coming soon to Pod Nuts Pro, where it might be some sort of holiday edition that we're working on. So
that's good. That's good. He's always good to have around. That's for sure.
But I don't think he listens to these, so I think I'll be able to ask him when he's on the show if he's used his Fluke, and I would love to bet a dollar that he doesn't, that he comes back and says no, he hasn't used it. And he'll probably make some reference as to I don't know where it is.
Yeah, as expensive as that is, he doesn't know where it's at. Oh well.
But in his defense, he's not in the field. So
that's right. Yeah. Hopefully more in the management area.
Yep. Hopefully his techs are using it and getting some nice benefits out of it. I love mine. In fact, I probably shouldn't say this. I have 2. So my old one, I've got to get upgraded to be at the same level of the new one.
And is that costly to get it upgraded? Or I take it's got to be cheaper than buying, you know.
Cheaper than buying a new one? Yes. Let's just say, I don't even know how to give this as a point of reference. Let's just say it'll be a nice house payment to upgrade.
It's not too bad, Dan. I guess it depends where you live for a house payment, right?
If you're living in a trailer, that's a cheap upgrade. But if you're living in downtown Miami, that ain't nothing. All right. So, Joe, we've passed the hour mark. So I've I tried to keep these shows at about an hour since the Rain Man left. And so I think we will end off there. I do think that it would be nice to have you back, because I know that we've got a lot more things that we can talk about. We didn't even talk about Sonic Wall, which you and I have had a few conversations about. And I know that there's a lot of other things that came up out of the unconvention and stuff. Maybe we can revisit some of your ideas for the unconvention after I've had a few more meetings with the planning committee and see what they've got, and make sure that some of your ideas and some of the others, especially Lori. And I do believe there's going to be a couple of special announcements coming up probably at the start of the year in reference to the next unconvention, in terms of where it might be and who might be one of the spearheads for the unconvention. I think people will be pleasantly surprised and happy with both of those announcements.
That's good.
I'm not authorized to make those announcements, but I'm going to tickle the fancy of everyone by saying when they come out, there's going to be some nice interest and smiles.
Well, I don't take me wrong. I mean, I appreciate everything that you know, Matt Rodella and Corey Fruitman from Instant House Call, and you guys, you know, Mike Smith from Mike Tech Show, you know, that unconvention just doesn't happen by osmosis. It takes a lot of work, a lot of time. You know, you're taking your time to meet concerning it, you know, so I think it's great. I would recommend to anybody that hasn't been to it to go, you know, that's listening to these podcasts, find the money, take the time and go, because just sitting back and talking to the other techs and stepping back and look at your business, you know, while you're gone. You know, ideas, you know, I jot stuff down when I'm there, and I can't stress it enough, the valuable information you get from it, you know. But again, you know, my hat's off to you guys.
All right. I appreciate that, and I'm sure all of the other council members, I don't even know what to call the group that puts it together, but Corey, Matt, Mike Smith, Bryce Woody was involved. Even though he wasn't able to attend this year, David Greenbaum, the doctor, also involved. So I think people have really been gracious in telling them what a great job they did. They did a lot of the work. I just showed up and did a couple of presentations.
Yeah, well, you emceed the whole thing too. I mean, you did a nice job with that.
That was just telling people where to go and how to line up for lunch. That wasn't much.
I get told where to go once in a while myself.
All right, Joe. So you and I will get together at some point and figure out when the next time we can have you on. But I do want to say thank you for coming on and sharing some stories and some updates on the unconvention and everything. And look forward to having you back on again soon.
Thank you.
All right. And to everyone listening to this podcast, I want to say thank you for subscribing and listening to PodNuts Pro. And on behalf of the PodNuts Network and the Door-to-Door Geek, I want to thank you for supporting the PodNuts Network. Be sure to head over to iTunes, rate the shows so that they can stay up in the rankings and everybody can find them. We also thank you for emailing the show, supporting our sponsors, all of that. And Joe, for you, for all the other listeners, most of all, I want to say thank you all for creating this culture of giving back in the tech community. And we will continue to do that. And until then, holla.
If you own a business, no matter how big or small, email hackers and scammers are coming after you. AppRiver can make your company a much harder target. They have affordable services like spam and virus filtering, email encryption, and web threat protection to keep you safe. They also back their services with live 24/7 US-based support at no additional charge. Try App River services free for 30 days by visiting appriver.com/podnutspro.